Good to be with you again. And so I'm looking here just along the front row at this beautiful little child, and this one, and this one, and this one. And we were all cute little children once upon a time, but then we grew up. But there is such a tremendous blessing in children, and it's a privilege and a blessing to get to have them and raise them, and it's an important responsibility. As we go through toward the end of this lesson and then the next few, we'll be talking about mistakes that we make sometimes as parents. My purpose in that is not to beat us up or to beat you up and say, oh, I did this wrong or I did that wrong. As I said, children are surprisingly resilient. And after our children are grown, they can remember things that they were taught and make good decisions for themselves. I've seen that repeatedly. But while we're doing it, we want to take it seriously so that we realize, oh, that's right. I need to watch out for that. Oh, that's an important biblical principle I need to remember to instill. Because God gave us a lot of time. There's another one with these little ones. We've got a lot of time with them, and we want to, for their sake and for the kingdom's sake, we want to use this time that we've been blessed with to well prepare them. So we talked this morning about protecting our marriages. We need to be protecting our homes. I don't mean just our houses here, our homes, and protecting our children. I'm going to put this slide up. If we have time later in the week, we'll go into some detail on some of these things. But I want to say this world is becoming a more and more dangerous place for children. And I'm just going to list these briefly. I'm going to resist the urge to go into detail about them now. But the corruption from the entertainment media and oh, thank you. Forgot, thank you. Corruption from entertainment media, corruption from the internet in all sorts of ways, including pornography, offenders, predators, old and young. There was a time when we could more easily trust our children to go spend the night somewhere or just be in somebody's home. And for a lot of reasons, I would advise you not to do that without having confidence in who is going to be around those children. The number of crimes against children and the predators, it only takes a short amount of time. And this goes back to number two there. The predators now, they can spend hours and hours creating their appetite on filth over the internet and then looking for a chance to harm a child. Certain educational agendas, some of the things going on in some of the, of course it depends on the teachers, the school board, the principal, whether you're in a school system where a lot of this is going on or not. But some of the things being pushed over and over in a lot of our educational institutions would really, I think, almost be more child abuse, some of the things that are going on. Presuming medical solutions for behavior issues. Not that there is not a place for medication, not that there is not a place for pharmaceuticals, but bear in mind our medical community and pharmaceutical community is educated in a Darwinian mindset. In our Darwinian mindset, we are an accidental arrangement of chemicals that has gotten here through natural selection. In that atheistic mindset, it's not good or evil. There's not God. There's not Satan. Sin is not a problem. You are an arrangement of chemicals. Therefore, if you are behaving badly, The presumption is it must be your chemicals. Now, we're made of chemicals. Chemicals have a lot to do with a lot of things, and there are people that need medications. But watch out for agendas where it is presumed. First off, oh, there's a behavior problem. We're going to prescribe a drug. That's a problem in our society. I'm going to talk more about that maybe later. Feminism agendas and blurring of gender roles. Please help your boys to be glad that they are boys, to know that they are boys and want to grow to be men. Help your little girls to know that they are little girls, to be glad that they are girls and want to grow to be women. There is so much undermining of this right now, so much unhealthy things going on. Help your children appreciate what they are and respect the other. And just all sorts of declining standards of self-responsibility, conduct, dress, ethics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But let's start focusing on child training. Proverbs chapter 22, this is a truism. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. This doesn't mean that the child doesn't have self-will. There's many things in Proverbs that are truisms. This is the way it generally goes. A gentle answer turns away wrath. Harsh words stir up anger. You might find a situation where a gentle answer didn't stir up wrath, or a harsh word, or it stirred up wrath, or a harsh word stopped anger, but generally that's not the way it works. And this is an important principle. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 29 verse 15 says, a rod and reproof, and we're going to talk later about the value of both of those things together. Just physical punishment without correction? No. Just correction with no consequences? No. You're going to, there's lots of things that goes wrong with that. It's the punishment, the consequences, and the instruction together that are powerful. Now, by the way, not everything needs punishment. Accidents, mistakes, that doesn't need this. There might be some correction, some training there, but we're talking about disobedience, where the child is doing something wrong, they know they're doing something wrong, they've purposefully disobeyed you. That needs these things. A rod and reproof impart wisdom, but a child who is unrestrained brings shame to his mother. And if you've ever gone to the grocery store or Walmart, you've seen that. We'll talk more about that later. That's what the Bible says. Judith Harris, years ago, wrote a book, and it was Do Parents Really Matter? And it was reviewed in one of the news magazines. And fortunately, at that time, the reviewer recognized it for the bad advice that it was, and it was on the nature versus nurture debate. Now, for those of you that have raised children, if you raised more than one, you know that how a child is nurtured is very, very important. The environment a child is brought up in is, you know, most important. You also know, if you had several children, that they don't all seem to come wired the same. You know, there's different personalities and such. And so people have debated, you know, which is more important. And Judith Harris in her book argued pretty much parents don't matter. She said your child is who they are going to be based on two things, their DNA and their peers. And that's it. And you as a parent don't really matter. She did go on to say, and the reviewer mentioned this, that she did say there are some things you can do. So, you know, before you as a parent say, there's nothing I can do. She's not, oh no, there's something you can do. Since peers matter, you want to make sure that you make enough money to have them in the best school system so they will have the best peers. By the way, having your kids hang out with the richest kids doesn't mean necessarily that they're hanging out with the best kids. But make enough money so that they're with the best peers. And since looks are important in how you're received at school, make enough money to dress them in the latest fashion and orthodontia, or if need be, you know, plastic surgery. So, you know, there's something you can do as a parent. But that's about it. And I thought about it, and I think in some families that may be pretty much true. Suppose when your child is born, you put the child in daycare right away as a baby, and it grows up in daycare. Somebody else saw their first step. Maybe somebody else got called mama. And then they're in preschool, and then they're in public school, and then you send them away for the summer, and you spend very little time with that child. In that case, you know what's probably going to make the difference in their life? Their DNA and the people that are around in the culture. But that's not how it ought to be. Time issues. First off, just think about for a minute a garden. Some of you are probably going to, or maybe down here in Florida, maybe you've already started planting a garden. I'm not a real good gardener. My first garden might have been before I got married, and I dug up the ground, dug it all up by hand, and I went and I got some fertilizer from the chicken farm and got it all in there and everything, and forgot to ever, or I shouldn't say forgot, never bothered to plant anything. It didn't mean nothing came up. There was some glorious weeds that came up, like a jungle. But, you know, if you work your garden, at harvest time, you got a bunch of beautiful vegetables. If I live next to you and I put some seed in the ground in the spring and ignore that garden, at harvest time, what am I going to have and what are you going to have? You know, yours is producing this. Mine looks like the one in the bottom. And if I look at you and say, oh, you're lucky, you had good vegetables. No, that's not what it was. The fact is you spent time on your garden, didn't you? If there was a predator coming in, a rabbit chewing up stuff, you put up a little fence. If it hadn't rained in a while, you watered it. If there was weeds coming up, you pulled them. There's a reason that you got the harvest that you did, because you were putting time into it. Cat, a bird. Let's take a bird. A robin lays a nest, makes a nest in your backyard, lays an egg in it. How long, when that little new robin comes out of its shell, until it flies away? Ten to 12 weeks for a cat before it's away from its, can go on with its mom. For a robin, 2 weeks. It takes babies about 2 weeks to leave the nest or fledge. They usually stay with their parents for 2 or 3 weeks after that. And they're ready to go be a robin. That baby looks more than 4 weeks old. And I'm wondering why you're being so protective that you're still keeping her around. No, I don't. That's not a robin. A robin doesn't need to learn all that much from its parents. And so it's gone, and it doesn't need them. These children, how long do they need you? 4 weeks? Of course not. 4 months? No. 4 years? No. Years and years and years and years, our children need us. They need to learn more than how to eat a worm. There's important things that human children need to learn, and God has given us a lot of time to do it. Unfortunately, our culture is not valuing that and not understanding the importance of time with parents, with children. Be there for your children. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7. What did it say? Talking there to the fathers in Israel, it said, speak of these things with your children. It says, when you rise up, when you lie down, when you walk in the way. That doesn't mean that you can't talk about other things with your children. I remember working at a homeschool curriculum fair in Pennsylvania, and there were some nice products available, but one of the things was a math book for Christians. And I just couldn't get past, you know, the idea of a math book for Christian families. And so the problems were like this. Jacob has 12 sons. You know, he made one of them a coat of many colors. What percentage of his children had a coat? Not everything has to be the Bible. You know, let them learn about train speeds and getting from town to town or whatever. But think how many opportunities there are on a daily or weekly basis where there's a lesson in life out there that there's a valuable lesson for that child to learn. It doesn't have to be a long lecture, but there's a lesson. There's a lesson. There's a lesson. Use the time. Ephesians chapter 6, turn with me there, please. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. This is the passage that was read this morning. After saying in verse 1, let's go ahead and start with verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment. Verse 4, you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. And the importance of starting early. Starting early. Early child training. Lesson number one, basic vocabulary. I'm going to say some things here that I know are probably an overstatement and a little bit of hyperbole. But I want to make the point. I think it is a valid point. Lesson one. Basic vocabulary. This word means that. Train your child to understand and obey a prohibitory no. And never to use a defiant no towards you. And a lot of your job is already done. Sometimes I've said that's half of parenting. It's not exactly half, but it's a little more than half. This is so fundamental, and we'll talk in a few minutes about why that's so fundamental. Now, there will be bigger challenges later. You know, when they hit their teenage years, you're going to have some new challenges. When they start interacting with other kids and stuff, you're going to have new challenges. When maybe another baby is born, there's new challenges. There will be new challenges, but if you get your child to understand this at an early age, you've got the groundwork already established and in place for other things that come along. We'll talk about that more in a minute. So the importance of the word no. First off, what was the rule that God gave Adam in the garden? Here's Adam. He's in the garden. He's given Eve. And they have a rule. What was that rule? It was a no-no. It's like, all of this, you can have any of this. This one tree right here. This one right here. No, no. Thou shalt not eat of this. How mature were Adam and Eve at that point? I assume that physically, when Adam was created, he wasn't created as a newborn. I assume he's created as an adult. I assume when Eve is created, you would picture two adults. But how long have they been around? What's their level of wisdom and understanding? and they're given a rule. And the rule is no. The children of Israel coming out of Egypt. Now, they're adults. They're grown people, not the most mature generation of all time. But they're grown adults, and they're given the Ten Commandments, which are very important laws, but they are not the greatest laws, are they? I know they're not the greatest laws, because when somebody asked Jesus, what is the greatest law? He didn't cite a single one of the Ten Commandments. He cited Deuteronomy chapter 6, the passage we read this morning. The Lord your God is one, and you shall love him with all of your heart, with all of your soul, in all of your mind. That's the greatest commandment. And what's the second greatest commandment? Love your neighbor as yourself. Those are the greatest commandments. And Paul says in Romans chapter 13, on the love your neighbor as yourself, he says if you do that, that covers the other things. All those other things, don't kill your neighbor, don't steal from your neighbor, don't sleep with your neighbor's wife, etc., etc., don't covet your neighbor's self. That's all taken care of if you'll just love your neighbor as yourself. So why have the Ten Commandments? Why not just say, love? Why not just every sermon be, well, it's still there, love. And we're done. Because it helps to have things translated into specifics, because we all need to learn, and we all need to be reminded, and we have blind spots, and we can be I don't even know what trout word I was trying to say there. We need some specifics. Children need some specifics. If you left all the little ones here with me and you're going to all go on a hike, this is what I do when I left my kids with people. I didn't leave my kids with people that I didn't trust. If I don't trust you, I'm not going to leave you in charge of my little guy or my little girl. If I trust you enough to leave them with you, I would say, treat them as your own. You know, if he needs a SWAT, give him a SWAT. You know, treat him like you would treat yours. But if I'm left with all the children and y'all are going to go off and somebody says, now, if he needs to be corrected, correct him. I say, oh, we're not going to have any problem. I'm going to tell all the children just to respect each other and it'll all be fine. Well, you give me 10 or 23-year-olds and I just say, remember, respect. Now, you know what? After a few minutes, I'm going to have to get some specifics. Okay, no on the hitting. No on the biting. No on the kicking. We have to get specific. No's are valuable. Not because they're the highest law. As we mature, we can focus, I'm going to treat other people the way I want to be treated. Do unto others as I'd want them to do unto you. And that does automatically take care of the no's. But we also need those no's. So a respect and compliance for the prohibitory no. When you tell your child no, they have to respect that. So April's first spanking. April is my oldest, and she was sitting there and she discovered it was fun to just take the toilet paper and just, you know, pull it off like this. And she was having a good time. And Bertina went, April, no. And April knew what the word no went. And she's like, no. And April went. So Bertina took her little hand and enforced no. And of course, you know, wah! But then she stopped pulling the toilet paper. She realized, okay, mom said no, she means no. Expect your child to obey no. That doesn't mean that your child will always obey no. It means you expect them to, and when they don't, you stop what you're doing and you train your child until they do what you said. Remember, I don't know if Marine Camp is what it used to be years ago, but you remember the stereotype of the Marine sergeant and all the teenagers are getting off the bus to go to Paris Island? Does he expect them by the time they leave that they're going to know how to do a military acceptable push-up, make the bed a certain way, march? Yes, he does expect that. Does he think, oh, all these guys getting off the bus already know all that and they're already there? No. But why will they be there in a few weeks? Because he expects it. You know, he is not going to accept the other He expects it, and so he's going to get that. So when your children say no, or let me get to that, that's the defiant no. When your children don't respect your no, stop, teach them, train them, correct them, discipline them, that they have to respect no. And if you don't mean it, don't say it. If you do mean it, enforce it. Jesus said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Too many parents, no, no, you can't do it. No, 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 no. And then the kid keeps arguing, well, okay. That's a terrible thing to do to a child. I had a friend of mine that he just didn't respect his mom. When we were in high school, he said, the only reason I don't slap her is because I know what would happen when dad came home. Now, I think he loves his mom now. He's a grown man now, and I think he loves his mom now, but he didn't then, but she was that kind of mom. He was like, no, 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 and he would just keep on until it was, well, okay. Now, if you're going to say no, stick with it. Now, by the way, if you have a respectful child, and they're not a defiant child, they're not trying to get away with things, they're a respectful child, and sometimes they have some information you may not know about, and they want to say that, and they said, Mom, can I give you some other information about that? And you say, sure. And they explain something that's going on. Okay, then it would be okay in a respectful child like that to say, oh, didn't realize that. Thanks for letting me know. Yes, it can. That's different. That's different than the situation that's built where the child knows, if I just badger Mom long enough, I'll get to do what I want to do. Don't do that. And by the way, don't make everything no. I'm a good parent. How? I say no all the time. No. A lot of things should be yes. Yeah. Mom, can I, play in the street? No. Right. Okay. Don't play in the highway. Can I play in the backyard? No. Can I breathe in and out? No. Don't say no to everything. A lot of things should be yes. But the vocabulary test, what does no mean to my child? Now, I want you parents to think about this. What does no mean to your child? If your child thinks no means tantrum time, I'm going to pitch a fit, then you have not trained your child to respect no, and you need to do it. If your child thinks no means the defense attorney may now cross-examine, you have not trained your child to accept no, and you need to do it. If your child thinks no means don't do it while Mom and Dad are watching, you have not trained your child what no means. If your child know that no means no, good job. This teaches respect for authority. And that's going to be important throughout life. This teaches I won't always get my way. And that's important. For when they're 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 100 or beyond, we need to know we're not always going to get our way. We shouldn't always get our way. The world doesn't revolve around me. Why should I always get my way? I need to know that that's not the way life is going to be, that I always get my way. Learning no means they learn that behavior is more important than desire. And it teaches self-denial and self-control. The groundwork is already there that they're going to need to become a disciple of Jesus Christ. What did Jesus say in Luke chapter 9, 23, if you want to follow him? If anyone would follow me, let him first deny self, take up his cross, and follow me. The child that has learned, they reach for a cookie, Mom says, no, no, that's for after supper. And the hand comes right back down. That child's learned to respect authority. They've learned, I don't always get my way. Behavior is more important than desire, and I'm going to deny myself and control myself right now and I'll get that later. That's the tool set that they're going to need in life and before God. I watched one mom one time. No, stop. No, don't get that. No, I'm 12-year-old boy, roughly. No, no, I'm telling you. No, no, don't. No, don't touch it. No, don't. And he ignored her, and he just went ahead and did it. And she goes, oh, I'm going to get him a hearing aid. That obviously wasn't the problem. And then there were no consequences. When I was a teenager, I had seen kids that would say, and here's the other side of that. There's the defiant no. Because no is a pretty powerful word, right? And so sometimes our kids decide to try it, but instead of answering a question where the answer is no, they decide a defiant no. And maybe one time a child goes, no. My policy is basically if any of my children, most of them never did that, but if they did, it was not going to happen but once. And we were going to understand, no, absolutely you cannot have that defiant no. And partly it's because when I was a teenager, I would see kids that would go, no. And I just decided I'm not going to have kids that go, no. And I raised six kids. And I won't say that none of the six ever did it, but they didn't keep doing it. Sometimes people say, well, they're children. They're going to act. This is about child training. We're not babysitters. We're parents. It's our job to train them. Do you, if you're a boss in a company, do you have some workers that never seem to learn this? Have you seen how they operate as employees? If you're a school teacher, have you had some students that haven't learned these things up there? How does that work? If you're a police officer, have you had to deal with some people that don't seem to understand any of these fundamentals? You know whose job it is to train the children in these? It's the parents' job. Not to ignore that. No. Not to ignore that I told them no, 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 and they still did it. I don't know why. Well, it's because you're tolerating it. Don't do that. Teach them that, and you can have a little child learn when mom says no, it's no. And that heart has already learned these fundamental lessons. Even if they can't understand it and state it, it's the reality of what's going on. And the other things will fall into place. Kind of like that, do unto love your neighbor as yourself, that'll cover a whole bunch of things. How many teenage problems will be taken care of if these are in place? How many peer problems are going to be taken care of if these are in place? Substance abuse issues taken care of if these are in place. You see how that's just fundamental. So do that. Help your child understand that. And sometimes you might think, well, it seems selfish to me to insist that they have to open. No, that's your job. And you're preparing them for a more important job. Learning to submit to an earthly father prepares the child for submission to a far more important father. I remember one mom, and she had one of her children that she viewed as a problem child. And sometimes I would get a phone call. Listen, just listen to him. Listen to what he's doing. Listen to what he's saying. And the mom would get out of control and agitated and different things. And of course, that didn't go well for the child. And she would often say, I think there's something wrong with him. I think there's something wrong with him. And like one day I took him and just, we spent time together and he was fine. He was good and everything. And then another time she's like, I think there's something wrong with him. I said, he doesn't do that with me. And she said, well, that's because he's with you. I said, see, if this was biological, if he couldn't help it, he would be doing that with me. But she just viewed it that way. And one time, before she starts complaining again, we're there for a Bible study, And little guy said something or other, and she told him, you know, go down to the basement. And he did, but as he turned and went, he went, no. And he went downstairs. Not real loud, but just kind of no. And then, you know, a few minutes later, she was back to her. I don't know why he's the way he is. I said, well, maybe it's because of little things like that a while ago when he told you no and you didn't do anything about it. And she goes, you heard that? I said, yeah. Same mom told me one time, I don't have time to deal with every disobedience. We'll see this later. That's like saying, I don't have time to get rid of lice. If your child comes home with lice and you say, I don't have time to deal with it today, is it going to go away? No. It's going to get worse. Take the time. I'm belaboring this point, but I'm trying to emphasize this point. Take the time to train your... Now, will they ever surprise you and do something ridiculous? Yes. And that's where you stop whatever you're doing and realize your mission right then is to help that child learn that lesson. And then, and expect them to do that. Respect and compliance for the prohibitory no, and zero tolerance for that defiant, rebellious no. Avoiding upside-down homes. This next, if you're looking for a house, you might want to buy that house. You would not buy that house. Nobody here wants to live in that house. But I'm going to tell you what, there's a lot of people that live in these type of homes where the children's fits and tantrums control what happens in that home. That is an upside-down home. This, I think most of this I borrowed from a fellow named Michael Pearl that wrote a book. I don't have the quote here. So if there's something not in it, that might be where I adapted it. If it's not as good, but the good stuff I'll attribute to him. And maybe most of it's from him. But it said, child-centered homes versus God-centered homes. Too many children view the home, the parents, the food, etc., as merely a means to an end to satisfy and please the child. The child makes his demands and manipulates the parents via tantrums and repeated misbehavior. Parents bow to the will of the child in efforts to placate and appease his whims and dissatisfactions, or suffer through increased strife and conflict when they cannot. The home is like a house built upside down. I was doing this series in Birmingham one time, and somebody told me a story. I thought it was maybe one of those apocryphal stories, you know. But I thought, oh, that makes a good point, so I started incorporating it into my lessons. And I would usually say, and I don't know that this is true, maybe just a story, but it makes a point. Now, one time I was in Manchester, Tennessee, and I told the story, and Sarah Bain Bunning was there. And she said, no, that's true, because it was Bob Bunting that saw it. And she gave me more details. It happened here in Florida, like I think maybe late 50s, early 60s. He was down here somewhere in Florida during the meeting. I just realized I'm in Florida, so if this was you, sorry. But I'm going to go ahead. There was a family, and they had a nice home and nice interior decorating and everything, but none of the expensive curtains and stuff were on the wall because the little kid had just pulled them down, and the little kid was just running, you know, doing whatever they wanted to do. And one morning, one of the parents cooked breakfast for the little kid and put it in front of him, and the child went, I don't want it. And the parent said, what do you want? And the child said, I want a worm. And the parent went outside and dug around until they found a worm. And they brought the worm in. And the child said, I want it cooked. And the parent cooked the worm. Then he said, I want it cut in half. And you eat half of it. I'm not going to say the adult. I'm going to say the parent ate their half of the worm. The child had run out of things to demand and so went back to the basic beginning. They didn't want it. Is that a happy child? What kind of a life is that child headed for without some correction and some training? Now, at some point, that child, like any of us, can say, I need to do something different than what I was taught. And we can all grow up and say, I'm going to take responsibility. And one of the most amazing things that I see is sometimes when people are brought up in a situation where they're not given good training, or they're brought up in a dysfunctional family, or they're irresponsible parents, and you've seen this too, and maybe some of you are this person, and somebody said, the dysfunction and the abuse and all the other vices ends here, and a person decides, my family is going to have something different. And that is a beautiful thing. And in any family, any good family, you go back in time, and there was somebody that decided to do that. Because none of us have solid lineages of just stellar people all throughout time. There's been a lot of foolish behavior. But when people decide, no, I'm going to do something different, that's beautiful. But the thing is, I shouldn't hope that I'm not going to train my child. I'm going to reward their misbehavior. I'm going to not give them any advantage and hope that they figure it out. No. Give your child the advantage of training. We need to wind up here in a minute. The child needs to understand it's not me first, then the parents, and then God. The child needs to understand, no, God's first, then dad, then mom, then me. Children appreciate structure. Children, have you ever noticed that if you have a child that comes from a home where there's no structure and maybe nobody cares about them, and they come in your home and there is structure and rules, do you notice how much they love being in your home? It's not that every child likes every rule when the rule is given, but children thrive under structure and love and peace and kindness and expectations. And they don't do well under neglect or just people not caring about them or helping them. A rod and reproof brings wisdom. A child left to himself brings shame to his mother. I'm going to tell another story tomorrow night, but I don't have time to do it now. I want to hit this real quickly. We're going to do number one, failing to discipline. I'm going to do this one real quickly. This is mistake number one. We're going to read some verses, and then the lesson will be yours. Failing to discipline. Proverbs 13:24 says, he who spares his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Please look at the two things in that last phrase. It's done out of love, and it's done diligently. We're not in charge of our kids so that we can take out our frustrations on them or our anger on them. The motivation is love. There's people that need to be in jail and are in jail and should be in jail for abusing children. We're not talking about child abuse. We're talking about loving discipline. This is out of love, and it needs to be done diligently. Discipline your son while it's our hope. Don't desire his death, Proverbs 19. Proverbs 22, foolishness is bound up in the heart of the child. The rod of discipline will drive it far from it. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. Knew one family. The teenage boy said to the teenage girl, maybe it was when they were a little bit younger. Yeah, because when I knew them, they were that age, but the conversation would have been younger when they were littler. And he'd said to his sister, haven't you figured out? The quicker you cry, the quicker the spanking stops. You know, so sometimes. The rod and reproof bring wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother, Proverbs 29:5. And Proverbs 29:17, 15 was the other one. Proverbs 29:17, correct your son, he will give you comfort, he will also delight your soul. Our time is up, in fact, a little bit over. Thank you for bearing with me. And if you need to respond to the invitation, won't you do so as we stand and sing?